Welcome to the Dance Center podcast. I am your host, Claire French, and I'm joining you from the traditional unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples, also known as Vancouver, Canada. I'll be talking to dancers, choreographers, and other members of the dance world here on the West Coast to find out more about their creative work and practices, and to discuss what it means to us to be dance professionals today. Thanks for joining us. Rachel Prince received her training at the Quinte Ballet School under the direction of Brian Scott. Rachel then moved to Calgary, Alberta, to attend the Alberta Ballet School's postgraduate program, where she was the recipient of the Ali Pour Farak Scholarship and the first program graduate to join the company. During her 4 years with the Alberta Ballet Company, she danced works by George Balanchine, Emily Molnar, Margie Gillis, Christopher Wheeldon, Jean Grand Maître, and many others. At 23, she went on to join Ballet BC, where she performed nationally and internationally. After 12 incredible years with the company, she took on the role of assistant rehearsal director for the 2019-2020 season and set the ensemble work for Mehdi Wolesky's Romeo and Juliet, as well as Prelude. Rachel was the associate director of Le Monde Dance from 2021 to 2022, a rehearsal director for the Nassau's Opera and Dance, and is currently the managing director of C-Space at PL 1422. Brandon Lee Alley was born and raised in North Carolina. Brandon is a multi-hyphenated artist residing on the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. Brandon began his professional career with Hubbard Street 2, followed by 1 year with Body Traffic in LA. In 2015, he joined Ballet BC. After 5 seasons, he continued to perform and collaborate with numerous companies and artists within Vancouver, such as Company 605, Eden Cohen, and Rachel Meyer. In 2022, Brandon joined Kid Pivot for Revisor and recently took part in the creation of Crystal Pite and Jonathan Young's Assembly Hall. In 2019, Brandon co-founded Dance Novella. In addition to creating dance, Brandon is also an audio engineer with a diploma from SAE in North Vancouver. Today, I'm talking with Rachel. Brandon was very busy setting up and getting ready to go off to tour with Kid Pivot in Europe, and so we were not able to quite all get together to have our interview, but Brandon features a lot in my interview with Rachel, and rightly so, as co-founder of Dance Novella, and as they are life partners, we were able to safely talk about Brandon's and Rachel's connection, both in the company and in life. So I'll just give a little brief introduction that's also available on their website, dancenovella.com. Dance Novella researches and develops groundbreaking dance theater productions to push the boundaries of how it can exist within a contemporary society. They say on their website, "We aim to creatively reflect, reimagine, and uplift the human experience by embracing theatre as a tool that can illuminate the multifarious values of humanity. We strive to craft bold narratives and concepts that amplify and empower both the audience and the performers. Our primary emphasis lies in fostering collaboration, not just within the realm of dance, but also through cross-disciplinary and cross-cultural partnerships. We are committed to making art that reflects our current social state while emboldening how we can move dance further from the negative effects of colonialism. Dance Novella is dedicated to the continuous education of ourselves, our collaborators, and our audiences as we strive to reimagine dance theatre as an art form that is accessible and inspiring for everyone." Early in 2021, they developed This and That for Ballet BC's inaugural event, Take Form. During the 2021-22 season, Dance Novella achieved the honor of being an artist in residence with Ballet BC, Dance Victoria, and the Shadbolt Center for the Arts. These residences provided fertile ground for the research and development of their work when the walls came down, which subsequently graced prominent stages such as the Vancouver International Dance Festival, Sound Off, and the Chutzpah Festival. As directors of Dance Novella, Brandon and Rachel believe in the transformative power of dance and art to affect change, offering fresh perspectives and viewpoints to society. While not always easy to digest, art and dance can permeate and enrich communities. Dance Novella strives to connect with diverse audiences and create unforgettable experiences for all. It's great that we get to do this. We get to talk about the work you're going to be presenting at the Dance Center in April. So we have so much to talk about. I think there's going to be so much that the listeners will love to know a little bit more about. I'm sure they are familiar with you in some ways as a former Ballet BC dancer and also with this current success of Dance Novella. I've had an illustrious start with the company, to say it's only, you know, like 3-4 years old. No, gosh, we're 2024, 5 years old, I suppose.
We're 5 years old now, it's true. Yeah.
Wow. We have a kind of, is that still a toddler of a company? I'm not even sure.
I mean, an infant. Yes. I think with the pandemic, we can call ourselves very early emerging because the pandemic was a huge setback. And even still, people are feeling the effects of that. So.
That's true. But I'd like to pick up on that a little bit because I think this is a really interesting, or to me, it's something close to my heart about launching a company like this with the experience that you two have in the background. The company is emerging, but it's in no way possible to argue that you two are emerging. Mm-hmm. And so as seasoned professionals, choosing to launch into a company like this, there's something really interesting about that line between, you know, you have an emerging vision, I suppose, as company mm-hmm. directors, which I'd love to talk to you about a bit and where that sits for you in terms of your life intentions and also now in the work you're making, but also how much you've possibly been able to imbue it with your past experiences. Of course, that's inevitable. Mm-hmm. But as you say, it is new, emerging, fresh. Mm-hmm. And that means that your experiences are new with this company. And so maybe we could talk a little bit about what made you decide to start a company and that first work. Yeah. As you mentioned in your bio, started with 12 Minute Max in 2019. And I wonder if the company came first or if that piece came first, or if I'm curious about all of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe the very beginnings of this company would be a good place to start.
That would be good. It'd be nice to revisit that. So I think the idea of Dance Novella started when Brandon and I had both already made the decision to depart from Ballet BC, but we were looking at what could possibly be next for us. Mm-hmm. That's pre-pandemic. So we're kind of like thinking, how are we going to stay involved in the dance community, but also make more space for ourselves as people? Because with Ballet BC, I obviously loved it. Being there 12 years, I must have really loved it, right? And Brandon also loved it. And but there was a point where you realize there's not a lot of room to grow yourself independently as an artist. You can grow yourself within that space forever, and I could keep growing. I could have spent 40 years and continued to grow. But if I wanted to just look at different parts of my artistry, not in a rep, through the lens of a rep company, then I didn't know how I could do that there. So I think that's where kind of shifting so that less of my days would be spent in the studio surrounded by the exact same people, and I could kind of open up a network. And that's how Brandon felt too, that there's so many voices in our dance world that maybe we could make a collective where it would give us the opportunity to work with different people and not just for 3 weeks at a time, like a rep company, but maybe a 2-year project like we did with Dance Novella, something, and then it goes on to something else. So you really get the freedom to see what's calling you mm-hmm. and not go along with the organization you're with, which I, you know, you always believe in, but that's someone else's vision of the programming. And now we get to be like, oh, we can do like programming and mm-hmm. see what do we want to explore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where kind of the idea came for both Brandon and I. And then we really are interested in being creators. So that was like the other part of that. So now we want a platform to kind of create work inspired by so many wonderful collectives and organizations here in Vancouver. And looking up to companies like Company 605, we've always just like really admired them. And so I think, well, let's start slow. Let's start now. We haven't even left the company. And I remember the day we were in Ottawa on tour and we're we had to have a name because we needed to start applying for funding. We're like, can't say Brandon and Rachel. So we had a few things. I don't even remember them, but Brandon said Dance Novella. And I didn't love it at first. I was like, well, it'll work for now. And then it really grew on me, and to think of the idea of storytelling and dance and how those words could pair together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Dance Novella was born on tour with Ballet BC, and the name was made in Ottawa.
Great. I'm thinking about, I spoke to Gabrielle and Jeremiah about when they were still with Cirque du Soleil, and a similar thing happened for them while they were still with Ancom. And so that's, I think that's a lovely kind of discovery, and also a connector that happened between you and Brandon on a creative level as well, that's born out of working together at Ballet BC and, you know, getting to know each other and all of those things. So there's kind of like a magnetism, you know, kind of a magnetic draw to like be able to articulate this thing, this other thing that you want to explore in life. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering as well, alongside that comes with you also having a say in scheduling and costume and all of the design elements that are so well looked after and cared for and under a company structure like Ballet BC, but that you don't necessarily have a say in. And so as creators and as artistic visionaries, you know, suddenly you get to play and explore in all of these other areas that are usually taken care of for you that you don't have time for as a dancer in Ballet BC either, you know. So I'm sure that's an element. So I'm sure that's quite freeing and also a little bit overwhelming, which at times.
Yeah, I think overwhelming for sure, because the resources with Dance Novella, we kind of expect the product, which is totally not realistic, to resemble that of Ballet BC. Like that's what we're used to. That's the level of excellence, artistic kind of like creativity.
Quality.
Yeah. We're like building works, we're thinking of that, and now we have like no resources. So I'm like, oh, you have to get very creative. And like Dance Novella exists because of the generosity of artists in our community as well. Like it hasn't, Brandon and I, it's been our dream, but we've had so much help along the way. Mm-hmm. Even the artists who decide to work with us, we can't offer a full contract like they deserve. It's very project-based, it's patchy. And so we try our best to make it work with their schedules, but we realize what we're asking them is odd too, because we're like, can we have you for these 3 weeks for 5 hours this week and 3 hours this week? Like, what is that for them? So the fact that they would want to go along on this journey with us, knowing that the circumstances are not like, you know, it puts them out a little too, but they are interested in our vision. And so for that reason, I think they agree and we all collaborate together. So yeah, Dance Novella has, from the beginning, our very first project, when the walls come down, it was a collaboration, and it only grew because of all the different voices who joined in, or else it would have been very flat and nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's something very interesting to me about this, because as a freelance artist myself and a project-based company mainly, you know, like working in those situations, my experience of, you know, contemporary dance life and dance making has been that project-based situation. But of course, you're working with dancers who are like you, former, you know, company dancers and project-based dancers or freelance dancers as well, right? So it's probably really lovely for you to discover all of these other, you know, some artists who are very used to that project base and can really support you in it because that suits their lifestyles and do more than one project at a time. Mm-hmm. And then the company dancers who do more than one project at a time because they do rep, you know, because they're used to like being in the, but with the same people for like, yeah. So I think it's a really fascinating thing. And I wonder if that also comes out a little bit in the work ethic of everybody that you work with and this kind of respectful and kind of guaranteed work ethic because mm-hmm. of who you're working with and how you know how to work. You know, there's something really interesting in that. Know how to work creatively and in a disciplined way. I think that's always really interesting. I've noticed that as a pattern in people who have come from companies and set up their own, that there's this really wonderful kind of sense of ensemble kind of immediately, and somewhat of maybe a more strict schedule than some. Or just, like there's a rigor and a discipline to a scheduling that you're used to, right? So that there's that mm-hmm. comes with you.
Yeah. In a sense. I mean, I have had that feedback that, or from some of our dancers, like your projects are very organized, even the way we pre-plan a lot of the content for each rehearsal, because with a small company, every hour counts. Like, it's a little sad in that way. We don't have the ability to walk in and be like, we're not sure what we're doing today, because we know this project has 15 days. And if we want to work with more dancers than one, now the costs are going up and up and up. So our most recent project, with six artists in the room, we need them all to an ensemble work. So we need to come in with yes, rehearsal schedules outside, but even inside the rehearsal, it's like very structured.
Yeah.
And we're very prepared, and each evening it's a lot more work. So we finish rehearsal, there's usually five more hours of work for Brandon and I once we're home, just to make sure we can get the most out of these processes. Like, to us, it's like gold, that time to be with the artist in this space. And then it doesn't matter really the outcome of the work. It's just like, for us, it's like getting it out there, having it become alive, seeing what it is, and then we can move forward from there. We're not looking for this perfect thing or this. It's just like, let's do the best to make our ideas come to life, and you can see where we can go from there.
Yeah, I love that, because the preparation is to ensure that something comes to life, not that a particular thing that's already decided comes to life, but that you can work with life, with it as a life form, as its new kind of this new connection between everybody that's everybody's making happen. Yeah, I think that's really wonderful. You also work with, so we'll get into some of the topics. I know that you do have a big interest in, as you say in your bio, and things like affecting change, but also addressing big topics like, kind of worldly concerns and emotional subject matters, or like emotions even. And you've worked with the deaf community, and you've worked with a lot of references to, obviously, to contemporary society, but really grappling with things, and you're learning things as you go.
Yep.
And then also you have your student work. So there's something around development and professional development, and how you're kind of learning about things and ideas and concerns as you work, and then also passing on your knowledge to students and learning with and from them and all of those things. So I wonder if we could talk a little bit about that and where that sits with you and Dance Novella at the moment.
I guess Dance Novella was developed quickly, and our identity is still growing and shaping, and we talk about it often, and what is our current society need from another dance organization, collective. And the works we've made, it wasn't like when we made When the Walls Come Down, we didn't know what a big impact it would have on us personally, on our collaborators, and on our audiences. And it was life-changing, like to work with communities that do not have all the same tools accessible, just because there have been less resources. It's very clear, especially our relationship with Caroline Hubert. And she's part of our process was just learning and sharing. Like, we're building a work, but 50% of the process was understanding the culture and sharing stories. And so I think that shaped how I felt about making work. And we were really privileged to have that project was funded very well. And so it didn't have to be rushed. And that's why it went over 2 years. But it was like the biggest gift we could have ever received to like starting a dance collective. I can't imagine if our first work was just like, another contemporary dance piece that we just kind of like, oh, it's cool, movement based. It's like juicy. And this was not any of those things. It was also very intimidating to put forward a work that wasn't about that. It's not about beautiful movement. It's about sharing a story and providing a platform for someone and using expertise that we do have to kind of help and see what that'd be like. And then in the end, like learning, Brandon and I learning how collaboration can truly inspire you to do things that you would not have otherwise done. It was amazing to see. We would have never thought of this, never thought. And it just like, it was difficult, but it was amazing. And, you know, I could say it, like, it's fine. Some people criticized that work and had something to say about it. Like, it needed to be much more refined and much more this and much more that. And I'm like, I think it was exactly what it should have been. No one knows the process we went through, the growth you went through. I don't think viewing it through the same lens as contemporary concert dance is at all the point of the work or the exploration. So,
well, just as a, I think it's beautiful. I think that the any sense of rawness or any sense of like tenacity or like almost not quite being able to reach something is a phenomenal place to be able to perform and to create in. And I'm wondering if the work that you have done on students and probably will continue to do on students, but I don't know if that's part of your mandate and vision for the company, but how do you feel like that is you're continuing to do your concert dance? Or do you think you're in a place of, is it where the merging of the storytelling and the concert dance meets potentially? I feel like with some of your titles and the scale of the work is, again, you've got that same kind of combination, perhaps.
I think our work with younger artists, I've always been really drawn to the mentorship of artists. Since when I was in Ballet BC, I became one of the more established dancers in the company. Not to say the emerging artists, you know, they're wildly talented. There's nothing I can teach them physically, but I took an interest in just being there to support other people's journeys forward. And I felt like when I left the company, that became like really strong for me. Like I noticed that I could connect with these individuals at the pre-professional level, that I was able to kind of guide them. They were responding well to my feedback. And I also could see there are a lot of struggles right now to become an artist in today's society, that it's been that way forever. I remember too when I was looking to get a job, but I feel like something's shifted as we also look at the culture of dance. And so I think, touching on what you said before, a few things, I am interested in looking, revisiting the negative effects of choosing this lifestyle, especially as a dancer, and I'm not blind to them, and how they didn't include everyone and how they made us all feel. And there's so many beautiful things about being a dancer. I'm so proud and fortunate to have had this, but I also am not blind to the negative things that came along with it. So we talk about that. I talk about that with students, and I'm not perfect. I'm sure there's things they can criticize me on too. I'm not pretending I know it all, but I'm open to conversations about changing. And so I think that's where I'm interested in mentoring and working with emerging artists. I don't think Brandon and I see our work as two separate kind of styles. We just work more so with the individuals in front of us. So using the strengths of the collaborator and then fusing it with our interests. I think that's what determines the type of work we make. And so when we select the dancers for our works, it looks a little different because we know exactly what those dancers can do and how like we could translate our ideas to them, versus if I walk into a room and I'm decided to work with this, like I did a work also in the Alberta Ballet. It looked very balletic, but it had contemporary elements because I could just see their movement language. They were going to feel comfortable in their bodies moving in a certain way. I didn't feel like I had to change who I was. I just worked with what would bring out, what would highlight them, and then allow Dance Novella to kind of come through their bodies rather than force movement on top of them. So I think that's more, I didn't think about like actively making like a concert piece. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you mind maybe sharing just a couple of points that you mean by negative in dance? Mm-hmm. Just a couple.
Yeah. Well, I think that just in my training, I love my training. I didn't personally have a lot of negative experience, but I witnessed a lot of unusual, I would call them at the time, harmful behaviors, body image, flat out, you know, I had it happen to me as well, but body image, and then also making room for different people in the space. There wasn't a lot of diversity in my training, and it wasn't even like conversations around that. Never. Like, it just was not discussed about making space for people in dance or like different bodies or like none. Like, it was just not a topic that came up. Like, this is what dance is. If you fit in, go ahead. If you don't fit in, try and squeeze in. Like, that's what we did.
Yeah.
And so that, and that's what I'm acknowledging. I squeezed on in. Like, you know, I fit in, but I'm like, or I didn't. I just kind of like made my way. Mm-hmm. And some people don't have that privilege, you know, and so then there's no space for them. And so that's kind of things that came up throughout my career at Ballet BC and making strong connections, and then leaving Ballet BC with the kind of shift in our culture, opening up conversations. Like, finally people are talking and listening and hearing. And so then Brandon and I with Dance Novella were like, well, the last thing we want is to make another company that pushes people out. Like, you know, we already have enough of that, even though people don't mean to. It's kind of just happened over time. I'm like, so we can consciously try, even though Brandon and I are both, you know, straight white people. It doesn't mean that we can't see a future for dance that includes more people and collaborate with more people and hopefully make space for voices within Dance Novella.
Yeah, I think there's something interesting and still controversial around this idea of an art form being kind of absolutist in terms of its, I heard that word recently, and I think it sums up quite a bit. There's staying true to what somebody believes is the pure or the absolute art form. And like you say, if you don't fit into that model, then it's not for you, which becomes exclusive and seems elitist, especially in today's culture. But like you say, that's not necessarily the intention. It's that the technique and the art form itself is prioritized and, dare I say, privileged over and above who is doing it. And that misses the mark on so many levels in today's society because it suggests that there's only one way that it should look. And then we start to run into all of the other issues when it can't look the same way on different bodies. It just cannot. The same shapes cannot be made. We can all try to achieve those shapes and lines, but they cannot be made. They cannot look. They will not look the same. So I think that's I think that's going to always be controversial for body art of any kind. You know, it's like, it just is. Any creative body making embodiment practice is going to, you know, on that external explicit level. So that's a very, like you say, that's been going on for a very long time and will continue. But I saw the Ballet BC show just recently, and I know you and Brandon, before Brandon left for Europe for his tour. I know you also saw it. But so I had this thought that maybe ballet isn't like, so Ballet BC is a contemporary dance company, I think, now. But what I witnessed, what I observed as a contemporary dancer and choreographer myself, was that actually ballet is really about scale to a certain degree. And I'm not saying that it always has to be lots and lots of people, but it is on a stage. It is on a very large stage. It's in, you know, opera houses, concert halls, these kinds of things. And that the dancers that were engaging with and who are performing are trained in ballet as one of their techniques, more so than maybe release, well, much more so than a release-based contemporary dance company or something like that. So I left feeling very much like I'd watched contemporary dance pieces performed by contemporary dancers who really believe in ballet training. And that was a real shift for me and a sense of articulation that I've been playing with a little bit and as I've watched ballet companies that are calling themselves ballet companies. And I wondered what your take is on that and whether I'm just not, because I'm not at all involved the way you are with the ballet world or with the Ballet BC world. And I wonder if that rings true for you or if there's a sense of, if it's just the evolution of ballet that you see or where that sits with you perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that I've been thinking about, but I also hear a lot from the community. And for me, because I joined Ballet BC when we were doing ballet, like point shoes, I had a tutu, like we were doing Balanchine works.
What year was this?
2007. And I was under the impression I was going to be a ballet dancer. Like when I joined, I'm like, okay, I'm open to doing neoclassical works at the time. Mm-hmm. So I was joining ballet company. Mm-hmm. And then it shifted at this beautiful pace that like swept me up. And like, to me, I didn't leave who I was. You know, I'm still me. I'm still a ballet dancer. I just choosing which way to express myself. Mm. I don't think we need to have dance look a certain way for it to be. I kind of love that it's called Ballet BC, and then you get there and there's no like traditional ballet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think you're right, the training, but also the lineage, like evolving from those classical steps, and that it is a journey to where we are. I think a lot of the creators that work with the company have had that same trajectory. Like we kind of stem from this place of classical ballet. Not all of them, definitely not all. But a lot of them, I think that's the case. And definitely the directors, definitely. Yeah. So I don't know. That's what I think about it.
I left with that thought. And then a little bit later on, I was just like, well, no, contemporary just includes ballet. And it always has. Contemporary dance has always included it. And so why does ballet have to not include contemporary? Just in my mind, just in the way I was making that division. And I was aware that I was making a division that is no longer valid, but that for me and for me to be able to sleep or move on to another thought, it was like, of course, ballet is in contemporary dance. So many contemporary dancers have trained in ballet. So I think contemporary dance, of course, does, you know, include ballet. So I don't think that separation is actually valid. I do think, just like you said, it swept up. It was kind of a gradual, and I think that's a beautiful way to explain it. The piece that you're working on now, Night is the Mother. Let's talk about this piece a little bit. I'll let you lead, maybe talk about the concept around it and the process, and then I'll kind of feed in.
Sure, yeah. So Night is the Mother, we started some exploration in the summer with Crystal Costa and Bryn Bridgen, just two artists, to work on some content around dreams. And we were interested in, we like universal themes and things that could kind of connect to different people in different ways. So I think Brandon was, we were kind of talking about it a little bit this morning, revisiting some things. And yeah, he was really drawn to not just dreams as in nocturnal sleeping dreams, but our aspirations and dreams. So the way these two things can go together and how we still don't know. It's just like a mystery of dreams. Like what are they? Why are they there? Like people have been questioning this forever and we're still questioning this and we're still living with it and not questioning it enough almost. Like every day we wake up, it's like, what was that? And we don't really know. And there's a lot of theories and there's a lot of studies, but it's like this part of being human that is just like this other world. And in a way, that's like being an artist. You know, we're creating, I like to say, like as a dancer, we can do things that are not human. You know, I can make an audience feel like I'm flying or floating or heavy or what I can. I think that's what's beautiful and connects the theme of dreams and dance and what and the endless possibilities, but also a direct link to an audience member because it's something we share. It's not something I need to explain. Like, this is like something we all have felt, unless you're like in 1% of person doesn't dream. And then they'll watch it and maybe they'll understand a little.
Rationalize it. Yeah.
That was the beginning of like when we were starting to why we would make a piece around dreams. And then it really, as soon as we realized we're going to make Night as the Mother, I have to credit Brandon. His storytelling, he really went deep and like a month of like him in his own mind and came out and was like, I have an idea. Like, I don't take credit for this part. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it needs, other than dreams, there's like, who are these people? There's a story. So he's created these six individuals and like kind of like this end of the world, like the, for another reason, the world is ending and people are using dreams as a way to escape reality. Mm-hmm. So this is, Brandon came up with this. I'm like, okay, let's go. So we start researching just, it's almost like the end of the world is not the big thing. We're like, yeah, there's an end of the world, but that's not what our piece is about. No. It's about like going into our dreams to find comfort or what does that mean? Or even to find excitement, or could our dreams be the reality and our reality be the thing we don't cling on to one day? Mm-hmm. And maybe because of the digital age, that's pushed this narrative forward. Like, can we live in the digital world? Do we need this reality? Do some people prefer to live in a digital world and immerse themselves that way? They feel more safe and more themselves. So yeah, there's a lot of think layers that came up for us. And in the end, the work that we will share, we see it as a portion of a bigger work that we couldn't possibly do. And that's any artist I know. But really, we're like, okay, we had to make the decision to kind of pull back and be like, this is what we can do with this amount of time. And let's hold some of the ideas because we don't want to just throw everything in. Yeah. And then, yeah, we're like, let's just wait on that and we'll do this for now. Mm-hmm. So the work is just like a, like an experiment on this big idea we have, I'd say.
Yeah. It sounds to me as well that there's space for you to do, for the movement vocabulary itself, to explore what you were saying about kind of the non-human or the kind of extended human or the, you know, kind of like what is in that imagination. What does the physical look like if we push our imaginations into this realm of dream? And yeah, how do we move in this other, potentially other world or other space? It's really beautiful. I wonder if, are you possibly thinking of it being a film at any point? Because you have a beautiful trailer of it. Mm-hmm. Felt like a silent movie. The black and white section that I saw on your website seems like it's almost like the black and white silent movies, or that idea of if whether we actually do dream in color or not. Mm-hmm. And we just remember it or imbue it with color when we remember when we're awake, that whole thing. I can see a connection to that there. Mm-hmm. As well. But yeah, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, so we love that. I mean, like, I think in Brandon more than I, like, I would love it, but he's really interested in finding platforms to make work that's not just live. And we've had deep conversation about this. Like, people are, we don't need to debate whether it's healthy or unhealthy. We have a big relationship now to the digital world and to our devices. And we have a way of connecting to one another through that and to art. And so, like, it's allowed me to grow as an artist in certain ways, for sure, because I have exposure to art that, you know, wouldn't have happened even 30 years ago, probably, right? Yeah. And now there's just so much. So then it is this platform that we could consider not just another dance film, maybe, but an interactive, I don't know, work. That little film trailer part you're speaking about, the black and white, we call it the evil-minded blues section, and it actually doesn't exist in the piece. Mm-hmm. It's projected into the piece. So it lives in a digital format only. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Excellent. Yeah, that's really interesting. We're giving lots of little teasers here for the performance on April 25th. So, yeah, I'm very excited to see this. So could you talk a little bit about maybe what you are doing as dancers outside of Dance Novella, if you do have any time for that? I know obviously Brandon is away right now, so maybe you could talk for him and for some of the things you're doing around that. And almost like, I think it's so inspiring because you have gone into this like freelance world, left a company, and you're both very successful still in your own right, doing your own work. And I just think it's a really positive message you can send out to people about how you're making all that happen, like as creative entrepreneurs that you are. So yeah, could you maybe talk a little bit about that side of things?
Sure. So Brandon currently, he's continuing working with Kid Pivot. So it's been about 2 years, I think, now. He had joined for the second portion of Revisor. Mm-hmm. And then he was asked to stay on for the creation of Assembly Hall. And so currently Brandon's on tour for 2 months working with that. And then he's also establishing himself as a composer in the community, and also choreographic voice outside of Dance Novella. You know, Brandon has his own independent voice in that way as well. Although yeah, our main focus right now is as a team.
Yeah.
And then for myself, I like to dance for Dance Novella, but other than that, I've kind of stepped back from being a freelance dancer. But instead, I'm really like dove headfirst into arts administration. So I'd take the lead on Dance Novella as our kind of like executive director position right now. And I've also taken on the managing director position at Vancouver Creative Space Society, which is the nonprofit that runs Progress Lab. Mm-hmm. So this has really opened up my eyes to more of our community, not just the dance community. I absolutely love having my eyes open to issues we share as artists and new issues that the more theater side of things shares, and then also space providers, because at Progress Lab, we're a nonprofit space provider. So like learning about how essential space is to artists and to dancers and how it directly links to Dance Novella and to every dancer, you know, mm-hmm. So yeah, for me, I'm just like rounding myself out. I feel like I want to like can look at like the future of dance and Dance Novella, and by not keeping my path so narrow, I can allow more perspectives to come in, and therefore I can kind of grow and move in directions that I might not normally move in.
Yeah, and I'm similar to you. I mean, I have a partner who's a composer, and we have a company together, and we do lots of work together, but we also have very independent working lives. And mine has a lot of arts administration in it and production management. And I've learned so much, and I know this is the same for you, that we bring our knowledge of creation and work mm-hmm. ethic and dance practice to that job. And there's something about those skills are immediately transferable to those areas. Mainly, I had a lovely conversation with somebody recently about this idea, this possibility of being able to kind of reverse engineer, like so that we're almost like working backwards because we understand what it is for a deadline and for a performance or for an event to be put on. And so you work backwards from what the expectations are of what that looks like. And mm-hmm. that really feeds into administration, I think, into mm-hmm. understanding what to prioritize, how to time manage all of those components, because you're aware of all of the nuances and all of the small stuff. We have to sweat the small stuff as administrators, right? That is the job. And so there's a lot of like understanding how, while you're keeping hold of the bigger vision and the end product, so many areas. And I just think all of it is so important. They go hand, everything goes hand in hand. So yeah, I congratulate you on all of it, like all of it. So what we haven't talked about quite, and I don't expect you to talk for Brandon in this one, I just wonder, it might be nice to hear a little bit about pre-Ballet BC, to go as far back as we dare. Yes. Yeah. A little bit about that. How did you even get there?
Sure. I can go all the way back. So yeah, I'm not shy. I mean, I am sometimes. As a contemporary dancer, I feel sometimes I don't want to mention my strong connection with ballet, you know, especially when I got to Ballet BC, but let's do it. So when I trained to be a dancer, when I realized I wanted to be a dancer, it was always a ballet dancer. I was like, I'm going to do that. Like, I just knew it. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but as soon as I started dancing and someone's like, took me to see the National Ballet, they were like, that, you know, that could be your job. Not there, but just that you could be a dancer. And I was like, oh, then I'll do that. Like, it was very clear. I didn't doubt it somehow as a child because I was young. I was 12. Like, there's something about being a child. If you, there weren't people there going like, no, you can't. Like, I didn't have that. So I was like, oh, I can. And I just kind of continued with my training thinking that. And I kind of set clear expectations like, okay, when I'm 18, I want to have my first professional job, which is like very, but I just really believed it. I don't know. I'm like, that's what I want. And then I didn't get my job till I got it offered at 18. But when I started, I was 19. I was a little disappointed, which is ridiculous. But I've always known I wanted to be a dancer from the moment I started dancing. And I put everything into that. Like, I mean, I put all my eggs into one basket. I just felt like that's what I was supposed to do in life. When I finished my training, I was actually at the Quinte Ballet School in Belleville, and they didn't have an affiliated company. So I thought, like, I better go to they have like pre-professional programs now where you can get seen by companies. Because I was doing company auditions, but it's a cattle call. It's very hard. And I knew I liked the Alberta Ballet. So I was like, I think I heard they had a pre-professional program. I'm going to go there. And that way the director will see me. And then my plan paid off because I was there in the school week and I got called up to the company to do Nutcracker. I did like the whole Nutcracker tour with the company. And after the Nutcracker was over, I got offered my first contract. And so like the plan really paid off. And I joined the company as an apprentice, and then I was later offered a full contract, and I stayed there for 4 years, I think 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. But then I have to admit, something was kind of missing for me as an artist, with all of the work being very similar. And I was in the Corps de Ballet, so I wasn't, you know, I wasn't ready for those principal roles or anything at that time. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of core work and a lot of like repetition, and I was struggling to find the joy in my day-to-day practice and especially my performance. I started having a bit of performance anxiety. Like, I just wanted the performances to be over. Huh. So I think that started to show up in my work ethic. And the year I left, I don't often talk about it, but it's no secret. The artistic director let go of 15 dancers. To have a full company change. Wow. I was one of those dancers. It's not like I was fired, but I didn't get another contract extended to me. Mm-hmm. And I knew it wasn't because I wasn't a good dancer. And there was 15 other people to keep me company who were all senior to me. So I was like feeling not that devastated about it. I'm like, well, they're cleaning house, as we say.
Yeah.
But it ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me because I could see I wasn't that happy, and I'm admitting my work ethic had kind of dwindled a bit. So that's when I was like, I have to figure out what I want to do here. And it kind of was like a wake-up call. Like, this job's not going to just be sitting there for me year to year like I thought it was. Mm-hmm. Like, the director's saying, no, I want new energy. All you people go. Okay. And that's when I was like, okay, let's get serious here. What do I want? Mm-hmm. That's when I knew I liked the dancers at Ballet BC because they would collaborate with us for the Nutcracker. And they were always like more powerful and more like unique. I don't know. I was like, they're ballet dancers, but they've got this edge. Mm. And so I auditioned there first. I knew that would be really interesting to me. And at first I was just offered a guest contract. But then a beautiful dancer from the United States had decided to go back, and we were very similar heights and very similar training background. So I got a call, offered me the full contract. So I was still in the contract at Alberta. I didn't have to have a gap year. I transitioned and went to Ballet BC. And it's funny, I auditioned just by a video. Like I mailed it in. Like I'm like,
yeah, all that time ago, that really, yeah, like heavy brick, like video. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that was kind of my journey to getting to Ballet BC. And when I was there, it just like flowed in a way that it kept evolving and kept me engaged. So we didn't sit in the same thing for long. So working with John was a huge transition. I'd never worked with someone who thought or cared about dance in that way. Mm. It was eye-opening, and the work ethic, I understood it then. Like John Elaine taught me work ethic.
Beautiful.
Mm. And before that, in the ballet culture at the time I was in Alberta Ballet, I'm not speaking to it now, but it just wasn't the culture to kind of like do that self-study. It was more like directed. Yeah, I was like, wow, I can do a lot on my own. Like I can really like take accountability for my own practice and my own process and my own performance. And I thought that was really beautiful. And then when John left and Emily came in, that kind of continued because I guess she had those same philosophies, yeah, probably from working with John and other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the works just progressed and introduced me slowly. It was a perfect rate, like to new things. It didn't feel like, you know, I couldn't step into those worlds. It was a lot of point work at first, and I was very comfortable in my point shoes from being a ballet dancer. So I excelled in that way. Mm-hmm. But then there was so much of the movement language of contemporary dance that I needed to work on. So thank goodness I had one thing strong there. So it allowed me, though. I'm like, okay, I'm feeling good in my point shoes, so now I can just study like the movement of the spine, the breath, the new pathways of moving my body. Mm-hmm. But Emily's an amazing coach, mm-hmm, and she does not give up. So she just worked with me and I grew, and it just every year, like I say, we evolved until we're the last year is in the company and I'm doing works I could have never imagined myself doing when I first got there. So
beautiful. That's amazing. That's a wonderful, what a trajectory. I love because it feels to me like the 12-year-old was like, that's what I'm going to do. The 18-year-old is like, 19-year-old, sorry, is like, I'm doing it. And then your body, you found the joy again, or you found the integration of the drive, and the through the self-study, you found the integration of how to also access the joy for yourself on your terms, mm-hmm, it feels like. And I think that's what Dance Novella is as well, isn't it? I think so.
I think a Dance Novella is like a really beautiful blend of Brandon and I, and I think that's what makes it really unique. We're very different artists, mm-hmm, very different people, very different artists. And at first it's a clash, actually. We're like we just don't speak the same language. But I think after 2 years we realized it was like a benefit that we don't speak that exact same language, because now our works have more layers, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I feel like that, I feel that working with somebody in a different discipline who comes at things very, very differently to me. And so it's almost like the lightning. And as the lightning hits, then you focus on the lightning. And but you have to have the conflict in order for the lightning to be created. And then the lightning becomes the thing that we discuss. And so that unites us. Do you think you both always wanted to be artistic directors? Like as your 12-year-old self saying, I want to do that, that's what I'm going to do. As an adult and in the company, everything, do you think it was being an artistic director or a director of a company you were interested in, or it's work, isn't it? It's the creative space.
No, I don't think so. I think, people that can speak to others, I think they are a good fit for a director position, that they want to communicate and help others. Mm-hmm. That's why I like doing it. I never saw that when I was 12, and I think Brandon and I still don't identify with that. It's when you said that, I was like, I am that. Like it's like we don't think of ourselves as artistic director, like the title per se.
Yeah,
we are that, but I feel like that's a big kind of title that would be like in my past career, like earlier career, be put on a pedestal. I just don't see Brandon and I just don't think of it that way. So
well, I think that's a beautiful thing too, though. But now also artistic director does not have to mean that you are that you need to be on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe never did, but especially now, I think that's such a beautiful thing. And to be an artistic director who does not expect that, mm-hmm. I think is part of the change we need to see in the world and be in the world. That's mm-hmm. what I feel very strongly about. Mm-hmm. So thank you to both of you for that.
We're trying, you know.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, this has been lovely and very nice to get to know you a little bit and hear a little bit about your history and a little bit about what's behind the work. I do know that you seem to be very good at and resourceful, actually. That's another thing I wanted to mention, that you tend to be working with a lot of different partners. And I think that's a really positive thing to be. You know, you've been artist in residence in lots of places, but you seem to be able to create opportunities for the company in different environments and different contexts, which I think is really wonderful. And I think that speaks to you wanting to kind of open up and, mm-hmm. you know, keep your eyes open and the work open. So that is really exciting.
I think you hit the nail on the head that we, you know, we don't yet know exactly the future of Dance Novella, but we don't also need to define that right now. And by keeping ourselves very open and trying our best to work with as many people as possible and not place a value on different opportunities, but trying to really see just if that opportunity could help us evolve, that's kind of where we are right now. And yeah, we're really excited about the performance at the Dance Center to share this work. You know, we will have just previously shared it at the Polygon too, but a gallery setting versus the Dance Center setting will be totally a different experience. And so that is the playfulness that we are, Dance Novella, you know, looking at traditional and non-traditional settings and something like Discover Dance that can reach different members of the community, students or just different people that than would normally maybe come to something if we self-presented. That was really appealing to us. So
mm-hmm. That's wonderful. We're excited. Yeah, I mean, the time of day is like huge. You will have a different audience. I mean, there's always a little bit of overlap, you know, but you will have a different audience and it will just be such a treat, you know, mm-hmm. to like for on both sides, you know, to be experiencing that connection in that way. I think that's really big. I think this is a lovely place to bring this to resolution for now. Thank you so much for talking with me. And we'll see you in the theater or in the gallery.
April. Thank you so much. It was a wonderful conversation and thank I hope you. We have more to come.
Yeah, I really look forward to meeting you in the flesh too.
Yes.
Yes. Wonderful. Okay. Thanks, Rachel. Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening. We would love for you to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts, as this will help other listeners find us and help us to grow our dance audience. We'll be back next month. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at The Dance Center, Twitter at Dance Center, and Instagram at The Dance Center BC. And if you'd like to support our work, please consider making a donation. Just go to our website at thedancecenter.ca, where you'll find extensive information about our upcoming programs and events. The music for the Dance Center podcast was composed by James B. Maxwell. Always a pleasure to connect with you through dance. Until next time.